The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome back inside the Quicken Loans studios at YSR. I am your host, Elissa Walker Campbell, as we continue to take you through the fastest 2 hours in radio. And of course, last week was National Signing Day. And as promised, we're going to pick up our conversation and continue with Jason Peter. We want to get the latest on some of the newest guys that are on board. And Jason, good evening. It's nice to have you with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Of course, Jason is joining us on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line. A ton of change, Jason, has transpired over the past few months with this program. We've highlighted it many times. You got a new head coach in Mike Riley, certainly wondering if he can recruit the type of players that will get the Cornhuskers back into the national title race, and you know, and if he'll be able to recruit players in a top 10, a top 15 class. First and foremost, just give us your assessment of who they signed and potentially what kind of impact can they have?
Yeah, I mean, the recruiting class wasn't great. But, you know, Nebraska never really has had great recruiting classes other than a few years when Bill Callahan was here, where he really introduced the Nebraska fans to this off-season, which is his own season of football recruiting, and really got everybody in a state and a fan base that's never really been obsessed with, you know, the star system and what have you, to buy into that whole thing. And now it's just such a big part of college football, it's hard for, I think, you know, these passionate fan bases to not, I guess, be obsessed with, you know, who's coming in next and who's coming in 2 years. Because, you know, it really is. It's its own season, and people follow it just as closely as they do the regular season. Now, like I said, Nebraska, people not thrilled with the class, but they are happy with the way that Mike Riley has approached recruiting here at Nebraska, the transparency that he's created, and something where Bo Pelini kind of, you know, all the doors were closed. Not as bad as Bill Callahan, but, you know, there were a lot of parts of the program that were shut off. And he just got to a point, Pelini did, where he wasn't really, you know, forthcoming and didn't want to share information or you know, anything that really had to do with Nebraska football. So people understand that Mike Riley kind of got a late start on it. There are a number of kids that, you know, he kind of brought from Oregon State, kids that Oregon State had targeted. And you know, I know we had mentioned it earlier a week or two ago that, you know, the player that Oregon State is looking for isn't the player that Nebraska is hoping for.
Right, right.
You know, they signed a handful of I think quality players. You know, one in particular, well, two of them, they're twins, are the Davis twins out of Blue Springs, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the recruiting defensive tackles, you ask any college coach, you know, it's if not, you know, if it's not the toughest position to recruit, it's top two, you know, with quarterback being the other. But you know, they feel real happy with these Davis twins. You know, they're both around 260, 270 pounds with,
wow,
with room to grow, and athletic, and you know, to have a top-notch defense, you have to have some guys who can take care of that run up the middle. If you're weak up the middle, it's going to be a long, long day. But you know, they got those two kids. They got a big offensive guard out of Lawton, Oklahoma, where Nebraska's had success over the years. You go back, Mike Minner, Will Shields, who's a, you know, a Hall of Fame guy. Mm-hmm. Those are Lawton, Oklahoma guys. And Jalen Barnett is a big guard that they were able to get out of there. You know, a lot of these kids, four-star. Eric Lee's a corner from Littleton, Colorado, another four-star kid. You know, they had about four or five four-star, and the rest, you know, for the most part, we're three-star kids.
You are listening to the voice of Husker great Jason Peter right here at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. We're doing a full recap on the 2015 Nebraska, who is on board, the new commitments. And one of the things I want to talk about, Jason, with you is, do you think these star systems, these rankings, that it really is overrated?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's
a great testament to that is what Gary Patterson has done at TCU.
Yeah, I mean, look at him. I mean, they're not pulling in, you know, these top five recruiting classes. And,
right.
And, you know, obviously you need to find kids that fit your program, kids that I think when you look deep into their mentality and, you know, the things that kind of make them tick, you know, you got to make sure they're the right kid. If you have, I've seen so many five-star kids that, you know, are supposed to change the way that football is played, and you know, the school has never seen a player of this magnitude, and they come and you never even see the field. I mean, they just kind of they fall to the back of the line, and the problem is that a lot of these kids, they come in with these high expectations. They don't reach them in the first year or 2 years, and then boom, everybody writes them off. You know, and not to say that the coaches write them off, but when you have an entire fan base that expects things out of a 17, 18-year-old kid in the first 2 years that he steps on campus, when people start, and no matter how many times you tell these kids, don't go on the message boards, don't read what, you know, the fans are saying about you, because, you know, I mean, according to these message boards, you know, there's a million head coaches or people that are qualified to be head coaches, you know, in college football or the National Football League, and mm-hmm. but words have an impact, especially on young kids, and they start to read that stuff, and then they believe it. And then before you know it, this five-star kid who maybe would have been just a late bloomer and could have been really something special, now he's got a whole mental issue that he's dealing with, you know, and now he's really fighting an uphill battle, and most of them never kind of, you know, reach the potential that they could have or the expectations that people, you know, put on them, on these young kids. And, you know, in a lot of ways it's not fair, but this is the world that we live in. But, yeah, you know, it's a system that for sure is broken. You know, the recruiting people like to point to, you know, Ohio State and Alabama. Well, yeah, you know, when you're signing 20, 25 five-star kids or four-star kids, there's going to be some success. You know, there just has to be. But when you're, you know, one or two or three five-star kids out of an entire recruiting class, the focus then really gets put on you. You know, when there's 20 other kids that come in with the same expectations, well, it's, everybody's kind of, you know, the same playing field. But, you know, the kid that you know, doesn't have 20 of his brothers that, you know, were five-star kids, he's the one who really has that spotlight shining on him, and a lot of these kids are just not ready to handle that at such a young age.
Okay, Jason Peter with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Of course, he's joining us on our Progressive Celebrity Guest Line. We got to take a quick commercial break. Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. And remember to listen to the show on the go. Just download the Yahoo Sports Radio app by searching Yahoo Sports Radio in your app store. You can also listen on any computer or smart device by going to stream YSR.com. streamysr.com. That's streamysr.com. Normal data rates apply. We will be right back with Husker great Jason Peter. Welcome back inside the Quicken Loans studios right here at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We are so glad you're along with us on this very special weekend, Valentine's Day, and we're talking to a real sweetheart of a guy. Always enjoy catching up with Jason Peter, Husker great and three-time national champion at the University of Nebraska. Of course, Jason is joining us on our Progressive Celebrity Guest Line, and the college football conversation, it does continue. And Jason, before we went to break, we were just talking about, you know, how Nebraska, how is this recruiting class going to compare to the rest of the Big Ten Conference?
Well, I think most services or you know, people, so-called experts, have Nebraska at fourth in the Big Ten, and you know, that's kind of, I think, generally where they've fallen year after year. You know, you're going to have Ohio State more years than not, you know, finish at the top, and you have Wisconsin, you have Penn State now. James Franklin kind of has put some energy back into that program. And you know, Wisconsin, I'm not sure, did I say Wisconsin or Michigan State? But, you know, those are usually,
right.
Along with Nebraska, those are the kind of the teams that Nebraska's battling kids with. And you know, I think most people kind of just feel the same, that it was a good class, you know, for what Mike Riley had in terms of time, you know, trying to keep a few kids on board, you know, mixed in with maybe a few that he really liked that he was going to bring to Oregon State, as well as, you know, a new kid here and there. Because as we all know football in recruiting, a lot of these 17, 18-year-olds, whether they really don't know where they're going up until signing day, they like to make us think that they don't know where they're going. And you know, the one thing I am happy to see, it seems like kind of that whole hat thing, and it's kind of, I think it's somewhat of a dead horse. It's been beat to death, I think. It's kind of losing, I think, a lot of its oomph, and I'm certainly one person that's happy to see that.
Luster.
I think you're getting a lot of kids maybe now that just want to get it over with and you know, concentrate on their senior season and not have as much as this wishy-washy, you know, I'm committed here, I'm committed there, blah, 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 blah.
How big of an impact within the Big Ten Conference, because the landscape has completely changed now with the addition of head coach Jim Harbaugh. I mean, you're already battling Urban Meyer as well, but just the impact that those guys are going to have within recruiting.
Yeah, you know, Jim Harbaugh is certainly a prideful man and prideful coach, and I'm sure it was hard for him, you know, signing the class that they did, you know, but here, I mean, we're talking about the limited time that Mike Riley had. Well, Jim Harbaugh had even less time, and, you know, the class wasn't really, I guess, well received by the so-called experts, but you can pretty much take it to the bank that is not going to be how Jim Harbaugh recruits year after year. You know, he's a guy that he's determined to make Michigan football relevant again, and I would not bet against him. It's just something, I mean, you talk about some of the great rivalries in college football, and a lot of people, you know, talk about the Michigan-Ohio State game as maybe the best.
Oh, yeah.
And now you have two bona fide stars and studs, you know, coaching their football teams, and it's going to be great for the conference and great for football in general.
Jason, you know, you've covered a lot of football throughout the years. I mean, what school do you see as when you observe these programs that does the best job at developing talent for the NFL?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, a team kind of that's right there in your backyard, and you mentioned them before with Gary Patterson and TCU.
Yeah.
You know, it's really tremendous what he's been able to do, and he goes out and you know, he finds kids with chips on their shoulder, you know, kids that maybe Texas didn't recruit or A&M said no to, you know, and now you even have Baylor in the mix down there, where the recruiting battles have gotten that much more intense and that much more tougher. So, you know, really what he's done, and you look at that football team, and, you know, we all know how kind of it played out there at the end of the season. You know, I would not have bet against TCU, and you know, with what Ohio State did to some of those teams, I think, you know, in that playoff and the Big Ten championship game, yeah, it was kind of Ohio State that leapfrogged. But when you just look overall at the top four teams, I'm sure that there, you know, would have been a lot of people that would have liked to now have seen TCU and what they would have been able to do. And I know, you know, there were the signs at the end, you know, of the season in that championship game where people said, okay, now winner of this game, you know, plays TCU. And that would have been, you know, in a perfect world to be able to do that. But, yeah, I mean, he's just, you know, it's something that he should be proud of. You know, are there other schools out there that do it? Yeah. You know, I don't know to that extent where he has them, you know, battling for national championships and conference championships in most years compared to, you know, where the experts are, right, ranking his recruiting classes. But, yeah, I mean, he's a tremendous job.
Well, you talk about Coach Patterson. I mean, he's had, what, 33 players drafted with a total of 72 in NFL camps. I mean, he's just done a remarkable job. Jason Peter with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And speaking of the NFL, the Combine, that's going to be getting underway, what, this week? What are you looking for? Who's going to be that number one pick in this year's draft?
Yeah, you know, it's tough to go against a quarterback when teams think that there's a quarterback that is a franchise quarterback. And, you know, this year it tends to be a guy who has all the tools physically, but obviously some character concerns, and we've talked about it.
But that big negative is going to be downplayed.
Yeah, you know, I mean teams that, they'll find every reason to, you know, teams that like them and love them, they'll find every reason to, you know, to push that stuff to the back.
Jason Peter has been with us at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Remember, we want to hear from you. Join us online at Twitter at eRadio Sports, and we will be right back with much, much more right here in Hour 2 at YSR. Welcome back inside the Quicken Loans Studios at Yahoo Sports Radio on this Friday night. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell, and as promised, it is time for another book review. The one we will feature in our next segment has been receiving very strong reviews. Author Bob Katz packed his bags. He spent an entire season on the road with college basketball referees. He watched the games they officiated. He listened in on their candid conversations in the locker rooms and hotel lobbies, explored the challenges that they regularly had to confront. The title of his new book is The Whistleblower, Rooting for the Ref in the High-Stakes World of College Basketball. Of course, Bob is joining us on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line. It's wonderful to have you with us, and I know things are pretty brutal up there in Boston right now with all that snow that you guys have had. Are you doing okay, Bob?
I'm doing okay, and happy to be in a warm room talking to you and your listeners.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it is a fascinating read. Congratulations on the book. And I found myself as I was going through it, I mean, actually rooting for the official. I mean, it's not an easy job. I am curious, though, first and foremost, break it down for our listeners. What motivated you to write this book? What was the inspiration behind it?
Well, I come out of a reportorial and journalism background, but more importantly for this book, is my background as a fan. And at some point, as you know, fans can be contented just watching the bouncing ball and clicking the remote, and there's plenty going on in a game to amuse you. But at some point, certain fans, and I think a lot, look for more subtleties, more complexities in their viewing of the game, and I was prone to that sensibility, if you will. And at some point, I thought, why not the ref? He is out there in the middle of the action, as close to the action as any player, and closer than the coaches in many times, completely immersed in what goes on, and yet has a utterly different perspective on what happens. So that's sort of what brought me to it. And in my first experience of trying to look at the game and attend some of the games with them absolutely intensified that perception, namely that the challenges that a referee faces going into a heated contest, and most elite college basketball, and you know because you were a player, elite college basketball games are intense. The challenges that a ref faces are comparable in nature. It requires some physical athleticism, it requires preparation, it requires instinct, and ultimately it requires the guts to do the right thing. And that complex of attributes fascinated me, and that's what I believe is represented, hopefully, in an interesting way for readers in my book, The Whistleblower.
We are shining the spotlight on your book, The Whistleblower, rooting for refs in the high-stakes world of college basketball, going one-on-one with Bob Katz. He is joining us on our Progressive Celebrity Guest Line. So what are some of the biggest challenges that officials, that refs, that they do face in the underappreciated world of being a referee?
Well, the biggest one is also the most obvious, that they, and we're talking about basketball and college basketball in particular here, there, it's mayhem out there. You know, as both a fan and a former player, it wouldn't be an exaggeration to call it chaos or close to chaos most of the time. There are a lot of moving parts, and yet they are required oftentimes to make a split-second determination on what happened, to make a equally split-second assessment of whether it merits a whistle or not, and to do so oftentimes in front of 15,000 semi-hysterical fans, and nobody even knows how many millions of viewers on TV. It's a real pressure cooker, and the skills that it takes to both do that correctly, and the elite ones, such as Ed Hightower, who's sort of the focal point of my book, the elite ones get it right approximately 95% or more of the time. They do make mistakes. But to do so in that environment and do it correctly and do it in a way that only they appreciate what goes into the skill was remarkable to me.
Well, and you really break it down in the book. I mean, the goal for referees, they approach each game with a very explicit goal in mind, that they want to create conditions through officiating that will enable the team that plays the best shot to have a fair chance at winning, right?
Had you heard that? That is exactly and explicitly it.
Yeah.
It is an agenda. So they go, they start it, a game starts. The coach has each coach has an agenda, each team has an agenda, a playbook, if you will. The refs, too, have it. And they have this agenda that is almost counterposed to what everybody else is trying to do. Their agenda, as you said, Alyssa, is to create conditions that allow the team that plays best a fair chance of winning. It sounds simple. It sounds almost like a grammar school exercise. But we need it. The point is we, fans, and certainly players and coaches, need it. Because without that assurance that everything that can be done is being done to get the game fair, it's just a form of entertainment, and that wouldn't be quite so compelling.
You are listening to the voice of Bob Katz, the title of his new book that's been released. I want to encourage you to go out and get a copy. It is titled The Whistleblower, Rooting for Refs in the High-Stake World of College Basketball. Where can the listeners, where can they go and get a copy of this, Bob?
Well, it's certainly available on the prominent online outlets, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. In terms of bookstores, I believe Barnes & Noble's, it really would depend on what locale, but any local bookstore, if they don't have it, would be able to order it in a day or two for any book buyer. So a variety, and it's also available on Kindle, too. I know, just go online and you could find it that way.
Okay, so did you share also, how do refs like Ed Hightower, how do they stay on top of their game so that because they're making these calls, it's instantaneous. I mean, they take a lot of pride in their job. They want to get it right.
They absolutely take a lot of pride in it. And I point out in the book, and I'd like to point out to listeners, it's a pride that very few other people share. So it's very much like a fraternity. It wouldn't be too much of an exaggeration to compare it to a military platoon where they are in the trenches doing tough work, and the subtleties of the work that they do are appreciated only by themselves. They take their mission, which is, as we've said before, the mission of trying to achieve fairness in this game. They take it very seriously. To do so, they have to be in good physical shape. They have to clearly know the rule book, which in the NCAA men's basketball, which is what I focus on in this book, is an ever-shifting sort of set of laws. Every year there's new dimensions to it, new ways of fine-tuning what the block charge call in the lane is, for example. So they have to be up on all that. And then there's what I refer to in the book and what the referees sort of mysteriously refer to as the X factor, the ability to have the intestinal fortitude to make a gutsy call in the heat of action. And that, as I learned, cannot be taught. You have it or you don't have it. The elite ones, such as Ed Hightower, who's the centerpiece of my book, and many others, do have it. But even they don't get it correct every single time.
Well, it is such a tough job, and I guess you just have to come to the conclusion that you're never going to please everyone. I mean, decisions are always going to be challenged.
Yes, I quote, actually, in one of the chapters. So the book kind of flows through chapters. I think there's a dramatic structure I try to show that some of the drama involved in refereeing is parallel to the drama in playing or coaching. You know, big games where there's an important call that needs to be made at crunch time. So I've got examples of that. But one of the quotes that I like most in the book is a referee told me that our job out there is to create calm, absorb the chaos, and try to ensure that the outcome is fair. And I thought, that is a nice little motto, and it may have application to other people in other walks of life.
Okay, Ed Hightower, you were saying he's the centerpiece of the book. Obviously, his goal was to be fair. What was that first live, nationally televised game like for Ed?
Right, the book opens up with the first game he ever did on national TV.
On CBS?
30. It might have been NBC back then. This was some 30 years ago. Is it CBS? You've got the book.
Yeah.
All right, well, I yield to your...
I think Billy Packer was announcing. I could be
okay,
wrong.
Okay, yeah. But it was some 30 years ago. It was in Iowa City, Iowa, a Big Ten game, Michigan State versus Iowa. Ed was a very new ref. It was his first time in the big leagues. Refs, I should note, come up through the ranks, just as players might, or certainly as coaches might. They started, you know, low-level high school or AAU and moved their way up into college and then ultimately D1 elite college games. The same was true of Hightower. He finds himself doing his first national telecast in his first season with the Big Ten and had been been told that doing your first game on national TV can really ramp up your career. It
right.
is a great opportunity. Blowing a call in a big situation in your first game on TV could terminate your career. And he's faced in crunch time with as I explain in the book, he's faced with disallowing the game-winning shot by the home team, University of Iowa, on a call that he makes in his first TV game.
Wow.
And it could have ruined him, but it was the right call, and he got congratulated.
Oh, what a compelling interview. We've been visiting with Bob Katz, the author of The Whistleblower, Rooting for the Ref in the High-Stakes World of College Basketball. I want to encourage you, as we celebrate the college basketball season, go out and get a copy of it. And, Bob, there's so much more I want to get into. Let's have you back on the show here in a few more weeks, and we'll talk soon. Thank you so much.
Me. I really appreciate that time, Melissa.
Absolutely. You stay warm up there in Boston, and we will be right back with much more tonight at YSR, the Big East Sports Show. Remember to listen to the show on the go. Just download the Yahoo Sports Radio app by searching Yahoo Sports Radio in your app store, and you can listen on any computer or smart device by going to streamysr.com. We will be right back. Okay, the college basketball conversation continues at YSR, the Big East Sports Show. We are inside the cozy Quicken Loan Studios right here in Houston, Texas. And once again, we are joined by the contributor from Slam Magazine and the owner and operator of the 5-Star Basketball Camp, our new friend, our good friend in 2015, that is Lee Klein. How are you, Lee?
Doing great, Alyssa. It's been an interesting time for the college basketball community with what has transpired in this last week or so.
Absolutely. Of course, losing the great Dean Smith, who passed away this week at the age of 83, and then also the news of the passing of Jerry Tarkanian. What do you want to share about each of these guys and perhaps some of those recollections?
Well, both of them had a tremendous impact on the sport. I know we've talked in the past. I mean, Dean Smith, really, selfless and one who was always was about the promotion of the kids and shied away from the big spotlight and the big show. But, the clapping for your teammates and the huddle at the foul line and so many little things. He turned Carolina basketball into a family, and that's something that exists today. Tark, if you will, is one of the, one of the controversial characters in college basketball, but really deserves tremendous credit for revolutionizing the game. He removed the stigma in regards to junior college players, which is such a vital and important part of the game today. He really is also instrumental in the birth of mid-major basketball and what he did in taking a program that was barely part of a school in 1973 and making it to just a tremendous success. He set the stage for what we have today and with Gonzaga. He also, he was the first player's coach. He was Calipari before Calipari knew what, how to coach and who was going to be in coaching. So Tark really had a terrific and tremendous impact as well. Both of these men did.
And Tark was always brutally honest, wasn't he? He didn't hold back in terms of his opinions.
No, he was, he battled the NCAA. I mean, he was unafraid publicly to challenge the hypocrisy in the NCAA and really set the stage, if you think about it now as we fast forward, to where we are today with schools and conferences and now even players questioning the NCAA system.
Two Hall of Fame coaches, Dean Smith, Jerry Tarkanian, winners on and off the court. How would you describe each of their basketball philosophy? I mean, I think of Dean Smith, play hard, play together, play smart.
Dean Smith, what he did is he really showed you how to play without a dominant center and have an emotion offense and, I think Dean Smith really was, this is the program, your piece to the puzzle of the program. I think Tark, if you will, was more, the program, if you will, is a tool for the individual player. And that, and while you're here, play hard and the immediate defense and, the running rebels, and we're going to do some things, but it's really a program for the players where I think Carolina basketball, you were a player, you knew you were part of that program, part of a bigger thing that was bigger than Jordan and Worthy and Perkins.
You're listening to the voice of Lee Klein, the contributor of Slam Magazine, the owner and operates the Five Star Basketball Camp. He is joining us on our Progressive Celebrity Guest Line right here at YSR, the Big East Sports Show. So let's transition right now because the regular season, it is quickly wrapping up. Selection Sunday is going to be here before you know it, and I'm anxious to get some of your early predictions. But what I find interesting is that perhaps this year's tournament, it could be without programs like a UConn, Michigan, a UCLA, a Michigan State. I mean, there's a number of marquee teams that are in big-time trouble.
No question, Alyssa. And this is sort of the rally the troops time. Most teams with about 8 conference games left, and this is when you need to get hot. And for Michigan State, they're starting to get hot at the right time. And Tom Izzo, the best maybe of them all when it comes down to getting teams ready for the tournament. He's able to take this team and now they're 7-4 in the conference and moving forward. So he's done a good job in positioning them. UConn, our national champions, is really in a little bit of trouble here, sitting, if you will, 5th in the American Conference and trying to find a way to get hot. Any time that a team is in a position where they can't defend their title, that to me, that would be a shame. UConn, I think everyone wants to see them return. We hope they could get hot I'd say, you know, Michigan and UCLA are the two other big hallmark programs that probably on the outside right now today that, you know, trying to find a little magic this last part of this February run and into conference tournament play in March.
Can UConn, do you think that they can turn things around so they're not sweating it out on Selection Sunday? Because it has been disappointing to see the defending national champs. I mean, to see them struggle. I mean, they've got a long ways to go to defend that title.
They do, and there's a question as far as how many teams can the American Conference realistically bring in. They have their work cut out for them. They play the top part of the conference. They play Tulsa. They play SMU twice. They play Temple. I mean, those are three of the best four teams in this league. So I would say my gut is that UConn will not make the tournament, that they will fall short, and it will be a real shame because amongst the things, Ryan Boatwright is one of the best guards in the country and one that will thrive if given the opportunity during tournament time.
You know, just an observation. I mean, I've spent time around Kevin Ollie, head coach Kevin Ollie, when he played for the Oklahoma City Thunder, and he's just a guy that handles pressure really well. I mean, it just seems like he's just kind of come to the conclusion perhaps this is a rebuild year. I mean, he doesn't look like a guy that's sweating it out.
No, that's not, if you know Coach Ollie, that's not his makeup. He's
right.
Not one to panic. I mean, he's fairly certain what the plan is, and he's trying to get the guys to buy in. But, you know, quite frankly, there's just a lot of new pieces. They lost a lot. You lost Shabazz Napier, and you lost, an important player in DeAndre Daniels.
Right.
And some of the young guys, Daniel Hamilton is a talented player, but he's not consistent yet. Rodney Purvis has shown signs of being a really good player, but he's not consistent. So it's really been the Ryan Boatwright show with not a ton of support on a consistent basis from other guys. Amita Brema is another example of all-world talent that just can't do it night in, night out.
Well,
so,
yeah.
I think Ollie's embraced it. He's got a young nucleus to move forward with.
Okay, Lee Klein, contributor with Slam Magazine and owner and operates the 5-Star Basketball Camps, has been joining us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Stay warm, Lee. Enjoy that vacation, and we will talk to you in 2 weeks, okay?
Sounds great, Alyssa.
That, of course, was Lee Klein, the contributor with Slam Magazine, owns and operates the 5-Star Basketball Camps. A special thank you to all of our outstanding guests. Jason Peter with our Under the Helmet segment. Jim Gurley, the author and sports journalist with The Race Within, his new book. Bob Katz, author of The Whistleblower. Mo Cassera, ESPN college basketball analyst. And Tommy Pippins with Fox 6 in Milwaukee. I'm Alyssa Walker-Campbell encouraging you not to drink and drive. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports right here at YSR, the Big E Sports Show.
Hi, everybody. It's Andy and James here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do fun facts.
Yes, we do. James, give me a fact.
Did you know that there is an extinct bandicoot whose official scientific name is Crash Bandicoot?
Lovely. I didn't know that. Did you know, James, that Upper Egypt is technically below Lower Egypt?
Incredible. Absolutely amazing. I would love to hear more about that.
Well, all you have to do is go and listen to No Such Thing as a Fish.
Where will I find it?
Oh, all over.
Okay, bye.
Bye.